papers, well, I bet on ISIS. More than your eye can see and ears can hear. Year by year, all the sense disappears. Nonsense perseveres, prayers laced with fear. Beware, two triple O's. It might feel good, it might sound a little...
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of The Pod. It is a beautiful July the 14th, 2014. Currently 9:51 in the morning as of this recording right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of The Pod. A couple more days back in Gillette Stadium, folks. Revs take on the Portland Timbers this week. So we'll talk with Brad Feldman today, Comcast Sportsnet play-by-play announcer for your Revs, about the match. And then we got some other topics, too. Obviously, some huge U.S. international topics that must be covered today. And I'll start talking about it before we get Brad on here. Concerning DeAndre Yedlin, going over to Tottenham, making the move official a couple days ago. Also, guy that got a lot of love there in this World Cup. And now, a couple Spanish giants looking at him. No, we're not just talking like Sevilla, some of the mid-table La Liga teams. No, we're talking about Barcelona. Fabian Johnson getting a look from Barca. There we go. The effect of U.S. soccer is in full swing, folks. Love it. Love it. So we have that on the table today. And also, too, something I want to get into with Brad, and I want to get into with the people listening at home. And that is Everton, America's club. You know, think about it like this. I look at Everton as a whole right now with... And the one guy that you look at with the Toffees is, from the American standpoint, Tim Howard. Everything that just represents U.S. soccer right now that's good with this sport and this country was shined through Tim Howard for 120 minutes in the Belgium match in the World Cup where, unfortunately, if not for Chris Wondolowski tapping, the U.S. would have beaten Belgium in one of the most landmark historic performances ever by a keeper in U.S. history. But unfortunately, or in World Cup history, history in general in this sport, didn't happen. But now NBC taking advantage of that, signing Tim Howard on to a broadcasting contract. He's going to do games with Arlo White. He's already doing stuff on TV for the network. He's a network guy. But is Tim Howard setting up Everton to be America's club? We'll talk about that today, and we'll extend that conversation next week when we get Brian Speaks back in studio. Talk some Everton. Unfortunately, Brian Speaks can't be here today. Just like the Kings of Leon drummer tried to battle through injuries. Yeah, Kings of Leon drummer got into a car accident and broke some ribs and still tried to perform. Couldn't do it. Brian Speaks tried coming in here today with the flu. And I said, Bri, chill, man. I got you. I'll take this one today. So, yeah. All me all day, baby. I'm Tom Quinlan. You know me, though. I think you do. I hope you do. And I am with you all on the pod today. And I want to open up not with Yedlin, not with Everton, not with Fabian Johnson, although we'll get to those in just a minute. I just want to open up the conversation now. We'll talk about this more with Brad Feldman in a couple minutes here. And that's Jermaine Jones. And where the Revs stand on this thing and where I stand on this thing. And I want to just get my opinion out there real quick on it. And that is, I read the Dolan Cuff article on Comcast Sportsnet. I haven't read it yet. Read it, CSNNE.com. Dolan just put it out there that the Revs need to make this move. And for logical reasons. It was from a field perspective and it was from the fan perspective. The field perspective is this. Jermaine Jones, at 32 years old, can still give you enough right now to put you over the top. Especially with this young group of guys, the mind molding is going to be crucial. You need somebody to come in here and make it tough for these guys. On the field, off the field, competitive as always, okay? There's one thing that we've heard a lot in this J-Heaps era is that Competition is first and foremost. Nobody should feel like they're safe at their position. Okay? So the one guy that'll come up here and shake all that would be Jermaine Jones, because the quality in play has to go up another notch with a guy like Jermaine Jones in there. Why? Played in Germany for a majority of his career. Huge asset in the World Cup for this United States men's national team. And now coming over to MLS, the eyes of the country are going to be on New England if he was to sign here. All right? You know, it's a couple horses in this race right now. And I'll tell you who. The two that stand out that are obvious are New England and Chicago. New England, just because of the comments that Mike Burns put out there via, you know, Kyle McCarthy. And then the other one would be Chicago, because they've already put an offer out there, but it wasn't enough money for JJ. And then the third team I'm putting in there is either team in LA. Okay, we'll put both LA franchises on one horse, because that, as a destination landing point, that's where Jermaine Jones could probably end up. New York, not happening. They already got their guys. New York City FC, I don't think they're going in a different direction. I don't think Jermaine Jones wants to play in the middle of the country in nowhere. Columbus, Philadelphia, New England, why? Well, it comes down to breaking the bank right now. Going into this with Jermaine Jones, we've learned is that two things. He wants top 10 money, and he wants to win. Now, there has to be a win now situation for Jermaine Jones. I think if he was to go to Chicago, there would have to be more money put in there, because the win now situation is not as great, I think, as it is here in New England. And the win now, and the reason why he got a bigger, better win now situation here in New England is that there's a greater crop of talent here. But in looking at in from the on field play, everything goes up a tick, and then off the field too, you appease your fan base. And you make two parties happy, and maybe that pushes the needle. And maybe it's not the needle pusher that, you know, Jonathan Kraft is looking at every day in his office when he's trying to figure out what designated player to sign. But the needle is this. And I'm trying to, we've listened to this phrase, the needle. The Revs need a signing that needs to move the needle. What is that barometer? What is that? What is the description of the needle? Has anybody ever talked about that yet? It's the winning. That, I think that's what it comes down to here, folks, is that the Crafts have to realize, not if Jermaine Jones is going to start putting fans in the seats, although it would be nice. It comes down to this. Can Jermaine Jones take a team that won 5 straight earlier in this season and avoid doing 8 straight in a row? Can you avoid another 9 out of 10 games losing streak? Can you do that? Because if you can, that's going to move the needle. To be consistently winning here in this area is all people give a damn about. Okay? Let's go back to the Chris Gasper article a couple months ago, okay? Gasper said this. This isn't a baseball town. This isn't a football town. This isn't a hockey town, even though it is the best sport probably in the region. This is a winning town. Professionally, if you want to bring in the eyes of the Boston media, and if you want to bring in the eyes of the average Joe, hey, how you doing? Then you have to win here. And here's how they're going to do it with Jermaine Jones. You're going to be relying on him. And here's the thing. You with Jermaine Jones, you're going to have to spend money. North of $6 million, probably. If he's gonna get top 10 money, he's gonna be pushing, you know, close to 10 million. Now the question is, are the Crafts willing to pay that? I don't know. It's an interesting scenario, because if they do, then it's a domino effect of things that people are going to expect to come here in this area. Well, how much do you invest in a 32-year-old guy? A 32-year-old Jermaine Jones. The play would go up. The play would be significantly better. But does it make you get to the Eastern Conference Finals? Can you beat Sporting Kansas City with the addition of one guy? You did it last year with Juan Agudelo. Here's what I've been trying to figure out for the longest time. Center, defensive mid, or striker? Where could this team benefit more from? And I've come to a conclusion, and it is this. And after reading Dolan Cuff, and after reading Kyle, the words from Kyle McCarthy, and talking with Mike Burns, this is what I've come down to. I want Jermaine Jones in New England. And here's why. It doesn't need to be thousands of goals put up on the board. Look at Liverpool. I'm going to draw comparisons to Liverpool here for a second. Liverpool struggled, and Liverpool did great. Here's where Liverpool did great. They had a guy like Suarez and Sturridge up there, SAS, or Suarez and Sterling, depending on the day, that were scoring relentlessly on teams. But the problem was they could never recover when they conceded, which is why when they went to Crystal Palace on the second to last day of the year, they went up, and when they started conceding, they couldn't fight back. And it's the fight back that the Revs don't have right now defensively that they could use. As a team, defensively, this is a much worse year this year for the Revolution. This is probably the worst year overall for Jay Heaps as a coach defensively. Jermaine Jones would fix a lot of the defensive issues that you have with the New England Revolution. Possession, it's not there. This is a team that has been outpossessed, they've been outplayed, and they're outmatched physically. I like Scott Caldwell. I believe Scott Caldwell is the future of the New England Revolution. He's an important asset and an important piece to what they want to do with their homegrown system. He is a product of that, and you want that to shine through your organization. But right now, Scott Caldwell can't lock it down for the rest of the season. And Bob Kraft, or John Kraft, which either Kraft is paying attention more to this franchise, needs to realize that you need something back there to solidify that for the rest of the year. And it's not a shot at Scott. But again, how much faith do you have in a guy like Scott Caldwell when he steps on a field? And then how much more faith would you have in a team picking up 3 points that has Jermaine Jones on the field in this MLS season right now? If it comes down to a few $100,000 that this team's not going to pay, and Dolan mentioned this too, then it's going to really make people angry in this area. Break the bank for this guy. Bring him in here. The scoring will come again. And I think, you know, a guy like Diego Fagundes could use more toughness than he could use more flair. Juan Agudelo was all flair last year. Juan Agudelo was great for the scoring sheet. But Juan Agudelo, at the end of the day, was about Juan Agudelo. Again, a great asset to this program. Huge in the terms of pushing for the playoffs. The Revs don't make the playoffs if not for that win. The Revs don't finish third place, make the playoffs, and come nearly so close to beating Sporting Kansas City in Kansas City if not for Juan Agudelo. But now, it's not about getting a guy like Juan Agudelo as much as it is solidifying the back for the rest of the year. Because I don't trust Jose Gonsalves. Andrew Farrell is still young and up and coming. You're missing Chris Tierney probably for the rest of the year, even though apparently he's back training again lightly. And AJ Soares can't do it himself. And then you have Barnes and Austin who haven't played consistent minutes all year. Here's the thing. Get the guy that has nothing to lose, Jermaine Jones. He'll go out there. He'll bust his balls. He can play both sides of the field. He's physically what you would expect out of a center defensive midfielder. He's not going to come in here and be a head case like Zaire Sen was. Zaire Sen was an absolute problem for this New England Revolution organization. And to be honest, it's another reason why I think they're going to go after and get him, because Sire Sen was eating up money on your books. So now you're going out there and you're letting some money off your books. So that's another reason why I think Jermaine Jones is a great fit for this team. Now, if they could have both, yeah, they would go out and get both. That's what Kyle was saying the other day. But the you have to focus on the needs right now. And I think it's been emphasized enough over these past couple of weeks that the needs are focused defensively and locking up that midfield. So I'm going to go with Jermaine Jones. I didn't think it was the best of moves at first, but now as you look at your options, you need Jermaine Jones in there. We'll talk with Brad Feldman more about it in a couple minutes. I want to get to some other things real quickly that I saw out there. Fabian Johnson, fullback for your United States men's national team. Mundo Deportivo, I think that is the name of the newspaper. I never took Spanish. I took Italian in high school. So, excuse my Spanish if my pronunciation is not right. But the Spanish outlet reported on Tuesday that FC Barcelona, who have been highly pursuing regarded Colombian defender Juan Cuadrado, without success this summer, have a global list of fullbacks on their radar as the Catalonian Super Club tries to augment its options in wide areas in both now and its future. And the list supposedly includes none other than Fabian Johnson, the marauding wide right back who lit it up for the United States men's national team's starboard flank at the World Cup before his tournament was ended early by a hamstring injury in the first half of the team's round of 16 loss to Belgium. Now, Fabian Johnson probably would have been huge down the stretch in that game for the U.S. This has to make you smile from ear to ear if you're Jurgen Klinsmann, right? I mean, this is absolutely immense in what he's been trying to preach here. Fabian Johnson's 26 years old. He'll be 30 by the next World Cup. All right? If I'm Jurgen Klinsmann, I keep Fabian Johnson in the United States men's national team pool, especially if he goes over to Barcelona. I mean, that's going to be an incredibly great piece of the resume for Fabian Johnson if he's able to get landed at Barca or somewhere in the Spanish leagues. All right, I would love to see him in La Liga. But Barca, now that's huge. Is he able to play at that high level? I don't know if he would be able to do it for 90 minutes, but as a sub, that's all he can ask for. Give him first team action. Let him get first team action on Barcelona. And you're automatically upgrading where you are defensively for 2018. You have to focus on the importance of your defenders playing in Europe. Because they're the guys that are going to have... there you go. Your last line of, no pun intended, defense in an opposing attack. And you have to be able to have guys that you can trust and rely back there. You didn't have that this World Cup. I think, and I hope to get this guy on soon. Eventually we'll get him on and we'll talk about it. But Tael Twama was saying it all during the World Cup. You had no consistency really with Jurgen Klinsmann's back lines. Going into it, we didn't know what to expect. During the World Cup, we didn't know what to expect. It worked out in the sense that you were able to get into the round of 16. But now, you know, and Sunil Gulati admitted this, we're past the point of just making it to the round of 16. It's advancing it to the round of to the quarters and to the semis, essentially. We're Americans. We want to win, damn it. So, Fabian Johnson, maybe getting picked up by Barcelona is an incredibly progressive move in the advancements of Jurgen Klinsmann's systems here. First team action is all I'm asking for, too. I'm not asking for him to start at Barca. Although it would be nice. You know, you never know. These guys can work themselves into it. I think the American footballer's mindset on what they can do internationally has changed now, especially with the signing of DeAndre Yedlin to Tottenham. I mean, just keep in mind, it wasn't too long ago that this kid, and before, I don't want to go into a Yedlin rant yet, but, you know, remember, Yedlin just got emerged into the U.S. National scene this year, and now he's playing at Tottenham. Fabian Johnson soccer fans have known for quite some time now, especially since South Africa. So you're familiar with this guy now. And Fabian Johnson's not at the end of his career by any means. So if he can go over there and play in Barcelona, you're already solidifying an idea of where your defense can be in 2018. Jeff Cameron back there. Fabian Johnson back there. DeAndre Yedlin back there. Maybe Andrew Farrell. I mean, I don't think Andrew Farrell will be starting in 2018, but he's definitely going to be in the conversation. You need to have, and what's even better about Johnson's games, too, is that he could play up, too. He could play up high. He could play in the midfield. So if you have the situation where you're on the fringe between, well, do I want to pick Johnson? Do I want to pick Farrell? Do I want to pick Yedlin? You'll have the option to throw one of those guys in the into the defense and one of the guys into the midfield. Because Yedlin's another guy, too, that could be versatile in the future. This is all, I think, right now, if you get, and I know I'm getting really excited about it, because nothing has happened yet, and we don't have any indications of a signing coming anytime soon, but if it was to happen, the possibilities that I'm thinking here are more endless than anything. And that's what I'm trying to focus on, is the lore of bringing a guy like Fabian Johnson to the World Cup with the experience of playing in the one of the greatest leagues in the world, in La Liga. So there you go. There you go. Fabian Johnson. Fabian Johnson, man. Who would have thought that Fabian Johnson, of all people, would be of interest? You know, people want to kill Jurgen. Jurgen has no idea what he's doing. Jurgen's killing U.S. soccer. Doesn't want to bring Landon Donovan to the World Cup. But all of a sudden, all these teams have, European teams, have a legitimate interest in U.S. players playing abroadly. Who's that a credit to? Come on. Yes, they played great in the World Cup, some of these guys did. But Jurgen Klinsmann, I'm completely on the board that Jurgen had something to do to get Yedlin to Tottenham. Something was done there. Yeah, Jurgen had a hand in his pot. Clint Dempsey had a hand in his pot, in that pot. So yeah, the international growth, I think it's going to continue to slowly expand. You know, it's going to hurt. It's going to hit here in New England too eventually, and it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt when one of these guys leave, because you think about Diego, you think about Andrew, you think about Kellen. Kellen could go international. Maybe even Pat one day could go international. One of these guys in New England is going to get picked up and sent internationally. And, you know, it's going to hurt, but for club and country, right? For country or club. We're country first. We're Americans. And we need to start battling back in this international race here to win on the World Cup stage. And this is the first step towards that direction. And continuing with that step was DeAndre Yedlin. And that's the next segue into here. What an incredible move for this kid. First off, I'm so happy he didn't end up in Roma. And it's nothing against Serie A. It's nothing against him not getting the playing time in Roma opposed to Tottenham. Even though I think he's going to get more first-team play in Tottenham than he would in Roma. I just think Roma, after watching them this summer, and after seeing them, what they did with Michael Bradley, which wasn't much, I just think that experiment failed. If anything, you go where, as an American, you've succeeded before. And I'm not just saying as an American and DeAndre Yedlin, but when you look at American footballers going to Europe, it really hasn't worked well for us. It's worked well for goalkeepers, Tim Howard, Brad Guzan, doing well. Brad Guzan probably going to start in the next World Cup for the United States men's national team. You want to send these guys to situations where they can succeed, and fans are familiar with the Americans. So, for example, Brian McBride, Fulham. You could easily send another American to Fulham and they would do well. I think there was an American the other day. I saw Russ Goldman of Cottage Talk talking about it.
Midfield. Started in the midfield for the U.S. I got to look up his name. So, there you go. Another American trying to succeed in a club where an American's already succeeded before. Clint Dempsey succeeded with Fulham. Also succeeded with Tottenham, which is why I think this move makes complete sense for DeAndre Yedlin. You're playing with Clint Dempsey at Seattle, right? If you're DeAndre Yedlin. Why in God's name would you go to Roma where you really don't have any type of background on what that situation is? At least with Tottenham, you have a grasp of the situation. You have an idea of what you're walking into, and that is all because of Clint Dempsey. He can set you up for the derbies, the atmosphere, the people that you're going to be living around, the expectations. And it's not setting DeAndre Yedlin up to fail like Michael Bradley failed, I thought, with Roma. He didn't get the run of play that you would have liked to see as an American soccer fan. He already came back to America before he's 30. It didn't work. It didn't work. Yedlin, in a situation in England, is going to be... I say England is the most competitive league in the world. It's up for debate. It will always be up for debate. What's the most competitive league in the world? It's like the chicken or egg theory. And regardless of whether it's the first competitive league or the second competitive league, it is allowing DeAndre Yedlin to play at a higher level than he is already in MLS. MLS is a high level, but it's not EPL, people. Let him build. And let us build as a soccer nation for the 2018 World Cup. All right, let's jump to the guest line right now. We'll talk more international stuff with this guy right here. Play-by-play announcer for your New England Revolution. So happy to hear him back in the gantry this week with Paul Mariner, Brad Feldman. How we doing, Brad?
Hi, good to be back.
We were just talking about DeAndre Yedlin signing over with Tottenham. Before we get into this Jermaine Jones and Rev stuff, I'd have to get your thoughts on just the excitement that surrounds a young kid like Yedlin right now.
Yes, he had a terrific World Cup in limited action. He showed well. We've always known that he can get forward in the World Cup in timely moments. He put in good crosses. He showed great pace and judicious sense of when to go forward, which caught a lot of eyes. I think teams from all over Europe were interested in him, and it's a feather in the cap of the league and the American game. I'm worried a little bit. Like, I think that, you know, I think he has the potential to be really, really good, but even though his final ball in the World Cup was better than what we've seen on a consistent basis, there are two things. One is, you know, just talking to people who are closer to the Seattle scene, and based on what I've seen with my own eyes, you know, he's going to have to sharpen up his skills and his touch, the way Tottenham like to play, and just the general overall skill level. You know, he's not that technical of a player. I'm not saying he can't do it. I think, you know, his pros certainly outweigh his cons, but I think he's going to have to clean it up, you know what I mean? And I mean that, you know, just sort of on a general basis. And defending is something he doesn't seem to relish. It's not something he loves to do. Like, he's an attacking fullback, but, you know, your first order of business is still to be part of the back four, and if he gets caught pushing forward at the wrong times, at that level, he's going to get smoked. So I just hope he doesn't go there and then end up out on loan for several years. If he can settle in and stick, you know, he has the basic skill set to be a really good player because he's such a good athlete. And I don't think that the World Cup was entirely a false promise. But, you know, let's check back in 3 years and see where DeAndre Yedlin is.
So what do you think put Yedlin over the edge, the World Cup or his early hot start in MLS?
World Cup, 100%, because, you know, all these teams are keeping track of MLS like they are leagues all over the world. But I think, you know, the fact that he was able to hold his nerve in the World Cup, and I think the book on him is always the final ball, you know, isn't always there. And once people saw that, he could get a good crossing pass and that he had, you know, his blazing speed, you know, looked just as sort of terrifying at that level as it did in MLS. And you'll say, okay, well, you know, a lot of these teams have enough money to throw some stuff at the wall to see what sticks. And, you know, I think that's what's going on here, to be honest.
So Yedlin signs with Tottenham. We saw the report on MLSsoccer.com the other day that Fabian Johnson's getting a look right now from Barcelona. What are the early positive effects that we're seeing overall, do you think, right now in U.S. soccer post-World Cup, Brad?
I don't think, you know, it's the same thing we've seen after every tournament, especially when the team does reasonably well, is, you know, the people scour those events for talent. And, you know, same thing as with, you know, Jerry Benton. If he'd popped in a couple of goals, I think there would have been even more interest for him internationally. I think the upshot for the U.S., you know, is no different than what teams around the world, and maybe even less in some ways. I think MLS hasn't always gotten its due. The U.S., you know, Fabian Johnson is a different deal, right, because he's not proving himself in MLS, but you know, as soon as Clint Dempsey scored in the 2006 World Cup, the offer started to come in, and that's what happens.
It's amazing. So now we look through our own guys, though. I mean, obviously Andrew Farrell, Kellen Rowe, Lee Wynn, those would be names that we hear hopefully in the World Cup pool for Jurgen Klinsmann as 2018 draws near. But a guy that interests me right now, Diego Fagundes, Uruguay U20, spent some time with them during the Revs bye week. Where do you think maybe Diego will be playing for in 2018?
Well, he has to become a U.S. citizen, is my understanding, before he plays for the U.S. national team. So, you know, he just got his green card a year ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he can say, I want to play for the U.S., and I like that idea. I like that that's where his, you know, that he's left the door open for that. But, A, he has to get his paperwork sorted, and B, you know, he has to continue on a positive trend, like what we saw in the second half of last year and in, you know, May, early June this year. Diego has had some better games recently, but, you know, he's definitely, you know, hasn't been performing at the level that we saw earlier in the season. So he's got a couple things to take care of. I think it's great that he got called in again by the Uruguay youth setup, and I think it's well-deserved, and I think it's a good platform. And I obviously prefer to see him in a U.S. uniform to Uruguay's, but you know, the reason he's going with Uruguay right now is that he's a good talent, and that's where he qualifies to play. So, you know, so 2018 might be too soon for Diego to be an American citizen. I believe it is. So I don't think that you're going to see him playing for the U.S. then, even if he expresses, you know, desire otherwise.
All right. So we're with Brad Feldman, play-by-play announcer for your Revs today, Brad. Obviously, Jermaine Jones and the Revs, this is a huge deal for fans. It's a huge deal for the front office, clearly, too. Mike Burns coming out and making a statement about it, which is rare for this front office to do. Who stands ahead of New England right now in this Jermaine Jones race?
I don't know if anybody does. I believe there's one other team that's, you know, strongly interested. I think that's Chicago. But I don't know if that necessarily means that they're ahead of New England. You know, I think the difference is that, you know, you see figures and things like that leak out from the other team, and that hasn't happened, to my knowledge, from the New England side. I think that the Revolution stand as good a chance or better of getting him. But, you know, the way I understand it is that it has to shake out at the league level contractually. He has to decide that he wants to make a league with MLS. And then if he does that, you know, I don't know what other offers he's weighing. My guess is that he could go to another team in the Turkish league, or maybe go back to Germany, maybe not as at high a level as he had been at, but, you know, even though he's going to be 33 with the World Cup tournament he had, I think that, you know, that's a pretty good calling card to put out there, and that, you know, it's probably not his only option, but based on what I'm hearing, you know, it's a good option. You know, that, he's using, obviously, Michael Bradley as the benchmark, but Bradley's several years younger, and, you know, you can make a pretty good case that Michael Bradley got overpaid going to Toronto. The amount of money they spent all in, not just on salary, but on transfer. You know, that's another thing, too. When you're coming out of contract, it's not often going to be a situation where the player commands as much money because you're not in a competitive bidding, situation. But, I think that if the MLS comes to terms, the Revolution are serious enough about this, Tom, that, Brian Boello had put out there that they're working on something with somebody else. So, and now that's been apparently put on hold. So anybody who thinks that there's a red herring, that they're just sort of flattering to deceive with Jermaine Jones, that's not how the Revolution do business. You just said it. They don't usually put out statements like that. So to any way delay or jeopardize a potential other signing besides Jermaine Jones to get into the mix for Jermaine Jones they're much smarter than that. And so I believe that the Jermaine Jones interest is strong and it's real, that they have a very good chance of getting him. And, for a lot of reasons, I would like to see Jermaine Jones in a Revolution uniform. I think it could, change the whole tone of the season. Their overall collective skill level and the specific skills that he brings to the table, I think would complement them, augment what they're doing, and provide a platform for a very strong final portion of the season. So let's hope that it comes to pass.
So if the Revs are still, trying to make player moves here and Jermaine Jones isn't New England's only option, who do you think would be a second best fit to sign behind Jermaine Jones right now, position-wise, for this New England team?
Well, you say who? I don't have specific people or players. Where on the field do they need to address?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much been out there, and I think you and I would agree on that. I think the two areas would be, some people call him a number six or, call him a holding midfielder, although I think, Dorman's done well, and Scotty Caldwell's done better than some observers have said. I like, what Caldwell's been doing since he came back in. I think actually he's very good against New York. I'm not, people say, Dax McCarty took over the field. Yeah, well, that wasn't Caldwell's doing. It was the other midfielder, so I didn't think got back and dropped in to help out and pressure the ball. That said, I think, with Jermaine Jones, it would be sort of more of a box-to-box holding type. He addresses that need, and somebody else in that mold, a more muscular, rangy, more defensive central midfielder would really help give some intimidation, some bite, some presence, and hopefully somebody who can pass the ball with the same sort of smoothness and efficiency that the Reds' central midfield core already does when they're at their best. Again, Scott Caldwell and Daigo Kobayashi are not the guys who are going to, put themselves about, really get stuck in. They're not, they're tough enough, but they're not tough guys, And so for a lot of reasons, I think that's a position they want to address. But the first order of business would be to get a striker, one who can finish, although that's a very, very valuable commodity. It's a very valuable skill set, as we know. People pay a lot for proven goal scorers, but also somebody who can play the target role. Like Charlie Davies right now is doing a very good impression of number nine, back to goal center forward, and I give him a lot of credit. If you dial it back 10-12 years, watching him play as a young player in this area, whether it's for Greater Boston Bolts or Brooks or then BC, he did a lot of things well, but that wasn't one of the positions that you would slot him in for. He was a guy who had lights out speed, got him behind, terrific instinctive finishing, can skinny on the dribble, has a million moves. Now he's doing a really good job of with his movement and his link-up play and his first touch and keeping his head up even before he receives the ball, all those things that Paul Mariner harps on as being part of that platform to bring the midfield into play. But all that said, having just, said a lot of nice things about Charlie, they want a guy who, is killing it in front of net, and so they're not relying on their midfield core to provide most of the goals. So, a defensive midfielder and a striker, that's what's been out there, and I agree.
We're talking with Brad Feldman right now, Comcast Sportsnet play-by-play announcer. Brad, you know, you mentioned Charlie Davis. Do you see him slotting into Jay's system still, and could you see him going for more than just 60 minutes here?
Well, I hope so, because I think the only reason he's been coming off is fitness. You know, it was a stop start for him in the early part of the season. We'd see him have a good performance, and then he was even out of the 18 for a couple of weeks, and then you know he had his really good game in his first start back, and then you know he apparently came out with a mild injury in training, and so then he didn't even start the following week. So I would think what the Reds are looking for, that he would go more than 60. I think he's going to start. Like, let's be honest, Patrick Mullins, for all his potential, is still learning. And I think that after he had that terrific month of May, a lot of teams really studied the video and said, how can we limit this guy, and did a pretty good job. And since then, Mullins hasn't looked as dangerous or effective. The question is, so to answer your question, yes, short answer, Charlie Davies is most likely to be, presuming the Reds go, 4-3-3/4/4-1-4-1, right? He would be the lone striker. But, I'm not going to probably lead you into your next question. The question is the guy to come on and replace him more likely in minute 75, around there, is it going to be Mullins, or is it going to be the newly acquired guy, Andre Akpan?
Absolutely. And, well, who do you think? Where does Andre Akpan stand? I mean, Sair Sen, I guess, was the old Andre Akpan. So does Akpan automatically leap Mullins for having that experience playing in New York? Or do you think he's in a similar competitive situation right now?
I think everybody's in a competitive situation. But that said, I think he'll get a chance to prove himself sooner rather than later. As I said when I was talking to Jeff Lemieux on the Revolution website's box-to-box video feature, I don't think it's exactly a swap for like kind. He's a different player from Sair Sen. I think they viewed Sair, they being the coaching staff, more as a winger type. I don't think that that's what Akpan is. He has some speed, but he really is a forward. And he's not... he doesn't cover ground in the same way that Sen does running at defenders. Akpan actually is a guy that can hold the ball. He's kind of sticky. He has a deceptive change of pace. He's a lethal goal scorer in college. He hasn't had the run of games to show that he can do that in MLS. He did score a handful of goals for Colorado before he went to New York. I like Andre's game, and as I said when I talked to Lemieux, I think that he's deceptive in a lot of ways. One is that people think that he's not a hard worker, but I think it's more his style that deceives the eye. He's a guy who shows up in the right spots, can get him behind the defense, and will work hard to pressure without the ball. But he does it judiciously, he does it intelligently, and because of the way he runs and when he chooses to run, I think sometimes fans say, oh, he's being lazy or he's not working hard. But I would beg to differ on that. I think he's a really hardworking, really smart player who, when he gets on, might fit in very well. But if you want to know where he fits in, I think he's most likely to come on either as a second forward if the Reds change up their formation to a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2 late in the game, or as a straight swap for Charlie Davies, presuming he starts.
Talking with Brad Feldman for a couple more minutes here. And Brad, looking at the rest of the season, a very important first three games out of this bye week break. You have Portland this Saturday, you have Chivas following, and then you're on the road in Toronto. Where does this team stand right now in terms of a playoff push? And without a Jermaine Jones signing imminent, can you talk about where they stand if they don't sign JJ?
Well, I think, to a certain extent, they're in a good position, right? They're just a point out. It's such a tight race between 4 and 8 in the Eastern Conference right now. They're right in it, but they could also easily fall right out of it. I'd say, like, if they got six out of the 9 points that are out there in those three games you talk about, they're still in it. You know, more than that, then they're looking good. Less than that, and you're starting to get worried if you're the Revs, right? So, like, 4 points at home and then a point on the road, okay. 5 out of 9 keeps you sort of on track, you know, but it depends what the other results are. More and more of these games are going to be in conference and these 6-pointers. So, you know, it's hard to know with all the permutations how the math will shake out. But I think the bottom line is this. You've got a 30-year season left to play. You're very much, as, you know, the Revs, you know, see it, in contention for the playoff places. So it's right in front of you what you have to do. And especially with 4 out of the next 5 at home, you got to say a minimum of 10 out of 12 of those to be in really good shape. And then they could be really in really good shape. Catching D.C. is going to be tough, and Kansas City even tougher. But I think, you know, 4 and 5 and maybe even 3 are realistic goals. And with the group they have, you know, they've seen they can play, you know, be a first-place team. They've also played like a last-place team. I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. So given their status, I think it's going to be right on the knife's edge till the end.
Who do you think drops off from those top three? I mean, you saw the other night with the loss that DC United took. The ego of Eddie Johnson shined brightly. So do you think there is a debacle waiting to happen with Ben Olsen's team with United, or are the top three teams in Kansas City, D.C., and Toronto pretty much set in the Eastern Conference?
I think Toronto's the most catchable, although, you know, they had the games in hand, and so I think they looked, you know, in terms of standings, maybe to be off the pace more than they were. But I think, you know, D.C., I don't think it's a debacle waiting to happen, although anytime you have Fabi and Espíndola on the team, you know, even more than EJ, like, I think that could be, you know, that could be out there too. But no, like, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, like, 4 through 8 are really the ones where it could shake out, right? That's where the opportunity lies for the Revolution. But, you know, there are enough games left. Right,
there are enough games left that the Revolution can get back in. If they take 10 out of the next 12 possible points, all of a sudden they're—I don't know what the numbers, you know, shake up—but all of a sudden their points per game goes way up, and you know they only have one less win than Toronto FC right now. So you know, I think Toronto is certainly, you know, if you're the Revs, you know, 8 points behind, 12 points to go, catchable.
He's Brad Feldman, Comcast Sportsnet. Great as usual. Brad, Premier League starts this weekend on NBC Sports Network. It's amazing that we're already back in the Premiership. You excited for it?
Yeah, you know, it already feels like, you know, we sort of, because they stagger the starts of the European season, it already feels like it's here. Like, obviously, the Premier League's a big one, and with NBC Sports, great coverage. Like, there's a lot to look forward to. Yeah. But, yeah, like, some of the European leagues already started. Champions League qualifying started 2-3 weeks ago. So, you know, once August rolls around, it feels like it's here. So, yeah, I'm juiced, and I'm really looking forward to watching the Premier League again. But that's not the only league I watch. So, yeah, it's a good time of year, the new season in Europe.
Premier League, La Liga. I'm gonna stick with the Premier League though, just because that's really my bread and butter right there. I was just wondering who you think could really take it this year.
I hate to say it, but I think Chelsea are the favorites.
Damn it!
I think they've spent really intelligently in the close season, and I think that, you know, even though people are always sort of scanning Mourinho's comments for how he's sort of trying to play the media and the public, I do think that when he was saying, you know, this season is almost like a rebuilding season for them last year, that he wasn't being entirely disingenuous. Now you look at who they've loaded up with, Costa, Fabregas, you know, bringing Drogba back, like, they look really tough. Some people are saying Man City. Certainly Arsenal are a much better team. They have more talent than they've had in years. I am personally biased towards Liverpool, and I like some of the signings they've made, like they took half of Southampton, went to Liverpool, but they haven't really replaced Luis Suarez yet. So as great as, you know, Sturridge and Sterling can be, they haven't necessarily replaced all the goals that they're going to lose with Suarez. It's just that X factor that he brings. I don't know how you replace that.
Well, we'll see what happens with Samuel Eto'o, if they're able to make a negotiation there, see if John Henry is willing to open the wallet and pay a pretty old Eto'o.
Yeah, I would love to see Eto'o, but I don't think he can bring that week in and week out the way he used to. So, yeah, that would go a ways towards replacing him. Origi is an interesting signing, but still very young. So, if you're asking me, I would have to say, if I were just making a bet without my heart involved, I'd say Chelsea.
That's all we do anyways here, right? Just bets without our hearts involved?
Well, you know, it certainly will be interesting. And, you know, it was such a great season last year. It was, you know, from start to finish, the most exciting season I can remember in a long time. And part of that is that there are several teams that have a chance to win.
It should be exciting. It starts this weekend. But Brad Feldman and Paul Mariner return to the Comcast booth as well. And we're excited to watch them as the Revs take on the Portland Timbers down at Gillette Stadium. 98.5 The Sports Hub and Comcast Sports. That's where you can catch those guys. Brad, it's always great. And we'll see you down at Gillette.
Tom, you demand.
Jermaine Jones, where will you go? Jermaine Jones, where will you go? We will follow just because we have nothing else to do. And we're listening to me pod. Big weekend here for New England coming up. You heard Brad talk about it a little bit there in referencing the New York game, Dax McCarty's space that he had in that second half against New England. He absolutely torched the Revs. And that is, and yeah, I just think defensively you're going to need to start expecting more here of Lee Wynn, because I think that's the guy that Brad may have been alluding to there that wasn't really dropping back on defense when McCarty was pushing up the field. 10-man New York team looked like they had 12 men 2 weeks ago and running all over the Revs. So these mistakes need to be cleared up before we move forward. Jermaine Jones really does fill that hole, man. Jermaine Jones really does do a lot for this New England team. We'll see whether or not it happens. I don't know at this point. I don't think any of us know, but I just hope. I mean, the way that Brad sounds, make the goddamn move, New England. What I take away from the conversation is this. If New England pays the dollar, they're gonna get Jones. So, Bob, pay the man. Do it. Get it done. Because a playoff run would be huge in this area. They could really push the issue in this Eastern Conference. I really do. And I'm serious when I say this about Eddie Johnson. He's a nightmare. And that DC United team might be a ticking time bomb with Eddie Johnson on it. Now capitalize on that if you're the Revs. And not just DC United. Capitalize on the entire Eastern Conference that has not been able to make a move for this guy and bring him to New England, where this is really the only piece that I think you're missing. You have three guys up top, maybe even four guys up top, that you can rely on for the rest of the year. Is it the most ideal situation at forward? No. But I believe Teal Bunbury, Charlie Davies, Patrick Mullins, Andre Ogpen, if those guys can get you through the rest of this season up top and you have Jermaine Jones, well, I mean, it's like the Juan Agudelo effect last year, isn't it? Well, think about it like this. Andy Dorman, Scott Caldwell, not the most ideal center defensive mids, but hey, we have great scoring up top in Juan Agudelo. Who cares, right? Right. Now, it's a little bit of like a roles reverse situation. You know, you have Scott Caldwell, but you can do better at that position. And Jermaine Jones is where you can do better at that position. Up top, you can rely and survive on guys just to get you through the final 13 weeks. Now, it brings me into another topic. Do I think the Revs are going to make another move behind Jermaine Jones? Yeah, but who? Who is a free agent out there right now that's not signed that the Revs can go out there and just pick up to put up top? Because you would think that if they had a forward in mind already, they would have a deal done. But obviously, if there is something on hold here, Jermaine Jones is asking for a significant amount of money, in my opinion, here. And then secondly, too, you have an idea of where you want to go after Jermaine Jones. So make sure that that direction is, you stay on that path. I think the front office is doing that. They just got to get the deal done with Jones. I hope we hear something here before the weekend. I'm a little uplifted on this Jones news. You know, I'm like torn in the sense of whether or not I want him, whether or not he's going to come here overall. Not the front office is going to make a move. Oh, listening to Brad, he could come here. It could happen. Let's see. We have a little bit of time before Saturday, but before then, you know, we'll see what this team does. Do they make a move early next week? I mean, could this be introduction weekend for Jermaine Jones? That'd be nice. Saturday at Gillette, come on down to the field. Here's a marketing plan for the refs. Here's my marketing plan to bring people to Gillette Stadium. Announce today. Send like a random email out to the press, right? Tell them to start telling people to be at Gillette for a special unveiling Saturday in Foxborough. Say it'll be a huge event that soccer fans all over the region would not want to miss out on. All right? And before the game starts, play the U.S. men's national team highlights from this World Cup. Make a whole big video on it. All right? Get people pumped about the game. And then all of a sudden, bring out Jermaine Jones and do the same thing that Seattle did. Have him take off his sweater, jacket, whatever, and show that beautiful Revolution jersey. 25,000 people easily. Jermaine Jones in the house. Welcome a new signing and bring in the dawn of a new age in New England soccer. Because that thing happens at Gillette, something along the lines like that happens at Gillette, and the mindset changes like that. People buy in. People are going to want to see that. My marketing plan to you, New England. Take it for what it's worth. Man, they could bring in Jermaine Jones here and make a playoff run. It would justify a lot of things fans have been saying for years about how a DP would just change things, but I think you forget about the I told you so's, and then if you're a fan, you just enjoy the product. You finally just to get to enjoy the product. One more thing before I wanted to go, and I didn't get to talk about it with Brad. Oh, well. But obviously, Premier League starts this weekend. Is Everton America's club? Are they the future of American soccer fans' choice? Because Tim Howard might be the guy to put that into the future. That's the topic of conversation I want to put out there for fans, just soccer fans. I'm interested to get people's thoughts on this. Follow me on Twitter at the Q Spot Pod, at the Q Spot Pod. I want to know what American fans think about the People's Club in London, in Merseyside, and that is Everton. Tell me what you think about Tim Howard. Tell me what you think about the club. They're not really the most successful club in the world. I mean, think about them like the New York Mets. If the Liverpool Reds are the New York Yankees, Everton are the New York Mets. And they're a team that always competes recently has competed for top four positioning in the conversation year after year for top six teams in the league. I don't think they've ever been relegated in club history. I'd have to do a check on that, though. They're one of the few teams not to be relegated. I know that. And I know that they've stayed in the top flight for quite some time. Aston Villa, I know for a fact, has never been relegated. So, when looking at Everton, though, you met Martinez this summer if you're a new soccer fan.
Roberto Martinez. You fell in love with Tim Howard. If you've watched the Premier League last year, you were introduced to Romelu Lukaku, and now if you're a new Tottenham fan, you have become excited with the new signing of Lukaku because of the amount of goals that he could bring, and he's kind of like a Suarez in a way without... Actually, that was my best way of... without the biting. He's like a Suarez in the way without the biting. So tell me, what do you think about bringing a guy like Tim Howard? Or what do you think about Everton FC being America's club? We'll talk about that with Brian Speaks next Tuesday, because he was not here today. He was sick. Usually we get him in studio on a Tuesday, Thursday. Couldn't come in. But I do have a special treat for him next week. I'm not going to tell him, though. I'm going to wait to tell him. So, we have some fun along the way coming up for New England here. The 16th. The Revs in Portland. Liverpool back this weekend as well, if you're a Reds fan. Barclays Premier League for me. Manchester City, baby! Reigning champs. But we're not done potting for this week, though. No. Tomorrow, on the pod, Portland Timbers owner, Merritt Paulson, will join us. We'll talk about the match this weekend. We'll talk about his franchise. We will talk about the All-Star game. He is a New England guy, so... a little insight when he thinks about this area and Saka kid. Maybe get a little insight on American and European business dealings. Ownerships. Come on, it's changing. Merritt Paulson leading the charge. What is the Northwest like? I have all these questions, and I am excited to talk with Portland Timbers owner Merritt Paulson tomorrow. Thanks again to Brad Feldman for today. Follow me on Twitter at the Q Spot Pod is the easiest way to get to me. I'm Tom Quinlan, and I'll see you tomorrow. Peace.
Be a dissident who ain't kissing it. The politics of chains and whips got the sick missing chips and all the championships. What's love got to do with what you got? Don't let a win get to your head or a loss to your heart. Nonsense perseveres, prayers laced with fear. Beware, true trip will always
be. It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game if it don't mean.